Hello and welcome everyone to this brand new episode of CoreCast. I am your host, Tim.
And I'm Mikey.
And this is Sahil. Welcome everybody to a brand new exciting episode of CoreCast. So without further ado, let's get to it. Tim, last time we talked about the direction of time and these different directions, starting with the the psychological notion of time, the electromagnetic and entropic increasing direction of time. And if you haven't checked out that episode, check out our previous episode to figure out what we're actually talking about in more detail. And so in continuing with this theme of time, I thought we could just discuss, like, can we go backwards in time? Like, there's this notion of it, like, moving, like, one direction inevitably, but can we actually go backwards? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah. And in fact, this intriguing possibility came from Stephen Hawking's original paper back in the 1989 or so. And he alluded to this possibility when he described these four notions of time that Sahil was just laying out. The one notion of time that we have not described was the cosmological notion of time. This is the idea that because of the Big Bang, the universe go from small to large. And if you look at entropy calculation, you see that, hey, in the beginning of the Big Bang, the universe was in a state of very low entropy, even though the definition of entropy isn't so well defined. But, you know, we can pretty much argue that every measure of entropy will yield something that's significantly smaller. Then Stephen Hawking postulated this interesting thought experiment. He argued that what if we live in a universe where instead of the universe getting bigger, what if the universe gets smaller? We kind of have imagine like a reverse of the Big Bang scenario. And then in the paper, he postulated that in that scenario, entropy would decrease, and that perhaps for people living in that universe, time will at some point, well, time will go forward in the beginning, but at some point it will start to go backward. So that's kind of what initiated this discussion. So the question is that real or is that not real?
What do you mean, like, backwards? Like, if I imagine like a movie playing where it expands and then contracts, there's still this like feeling that I'm still moving in one direction, time just bounce back, kind of like a rubber band. When I expand it and let it go, it comes back. But I don't say it's like playing backwards in time.
If imagine you're running on a computer, like you're trying to play, I don't know, universe simulator, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're trying to select all the different universes, and the one that you end up playing with are the ones that actually has low entropy at the end. So the universe that we live in now, it's kind of like, imagine there were some, I don't know, omnipresent being were to choose the simulation. Like, oh, what kind of simulation do we choose? Whatever that being was choosing like a initial condition that had low entropy, right? But imagine the being, as opposed to making that choice, it's making a choice at the end of time. Imagine that being was to do that. Then he or she, when they play that universe, you know, we will see effects like light, instead of being emanating from the sun, it will actually go toward the sun. And indeed, you know, as opposed to plates getting broken, it will get unbroken, and maybe people will get reborn, unborn, and all that. So it's not totally insane if you think of that possibility.
It's pretty crazy to me. I don't know.
I was just about to say the same thing, Mikey.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm certainly not advocating for it, right? But I'm just pointing out that in that original paper, Stephen Hawking did postulate that possibility. But if we were to suspend our belief system and think that, let's say this were to happen, right? Then would we perceive time as going backward, or would we not perceive time as going backward? If we follow Stephen Hawking's four arrow of time, it would mean that cosmologically, the universe is going backward. The universe is shrinking, but the entropy is decreasing. So the entropic arrow of time will be flipped. And using the same argument as before, we will argue that the electrodynamic, you know, arrow of time, you know, the fact that the sun shines as opposed to unshining, that will be reversed. And that also means that the psychological time, because, you know, our brain sends signal out as opposed to signal getting unsent, right? That will also be reversed. So if that were true, actually, we wouldn't feel the universe any differently. We would, you know, because all the arrows of time will be flipped except the cosmological one. Then we'll still feel, probably perceive that time goes forward, because we will only remember things in the future as opposed to the things in the past. And it will just be a choice of language, right? The future will be the past will be the future. We'll probably just call the past the future the past. It's a little confusing, but you know what I mean. You know?
Actually, Mikey, I'm curious, like, what do you make out of all this? Like, this sounds kind of gnarly to me. Like,
I'm trying to think of a question to ask. And I think the question that I'm kind of like zeroing in on is like, so I'm imagining a universe. The fact that entropy tends to increase, like, and on a macroscopic scales, that plays into how we live our lives, right? It's the reason why resources are scarce, because when you extract energy from resources, you're left with decay, you know, waste products, basically. If I imagine a universe that's, you know, kind of similar to the one we have right now, but just that one aspect was reversed, are you saying that that kind of universe is like that can't happen?
In principle, that can happen, right?
No, wait, are you saying it can't happen or it can happen?
Oh, that you mean a universe where waste energy gets converted into useful energy?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would say theoretically, that's not forbidden, right?
Isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can go through that. There's actually a theorem that can be proved to some extent that says theoretically, it's not totally forbidden. It would just be a really rare universe.
Can we take a step back? Can we explain to the audience what useful and like non-useful energy means? Like, energy is energy, right? What do you mean by useful and non-useful?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess I would say useful energy is ordered energy, and waste energy is disordered energy. So, you know, oftentimes we think, in school, high school, we learn about the energy cycle, the quote unquote energy cycle, where the sun, you know, shines rays on the earth. And then we absorb the energy, plants absorb the energy, and then we eat the plants, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, energy is cycled through. But you can also think of like an order cycle, right? Where the beams of energy that come from the sun are highly ordered. And, you know, plants absorb this highly ordered energy. And, you know, they radiate this very low frequency disordered energy. So we're basically sucking order from the sun. And these engines only go one way in these kinds of universes, right? It's the reason why you can't have perpetual motion machines. So just, the idea that resources become more useless with time is, you know, deeply tied to the idea that entropy is increasing in our universe.
That makes sense. So if I'm understanding this correctly, your question was, typically in our universe, processes are usually one way where they convert useful energy, this like direct energy from the sun, into more of useless waste energy, as so-called, because you can't extract anything from it anymore. And so your question is, can that go backwards in a universe that goes backwards in time?
Yeah. Putting it in the language of, because we don't, well, personally, I don't necessarily like the order disorder phrase, which is almost, it almost sounds like it makes sense colloquially, but it's really like a technical term in physics. We can frame it in terms of possibilities, right? Because the sunlight coming from the sun kind of hasn't explored all the possibilities yet. That's why we can kind of bottle it up and kind of allow it to go through the different possibilities for the future. And that creates useful energy. And that's literally, it's synonymous to exactly what Mikey was saying. And we call that orderly, because all the possibility has not been explored yet. And when all the possibilities explore, it's sort of analogous to imagining you're bottling, let's say you're putting a bunch of gas in a bottle, really high pressure, right? The gas molecule hasn't explored the room yet. So if you release it slowly, you can direct where those gas molecules will go. You can direct it toward one, you can directly in the bathroom or the living room, right? You get to choose, right? But the moment the gas molecules are all escape into the entire house, you don't have that choice anymore. And this choice is why, you know, we can choose the kind of work that we use the energy to do. And the question really is, this opportunity comes naturally because of the era of time. In the beginning, we have more opportunities, and at the end, we have less opportunities. So if that were to reverse, imagine for a moment that that can be reversed. Imagine that the molecules in the room were in the next 10 minutes, suddenly will regather into the bathroom, right? That's what we're talking about, if time were to go backward, right? Mm-hmm. That would mean that the molecule in our room has to be in a very particular configurations for that to happen. And then for example, the position of my finger cannot even deviate a tiny bit for that to happen. Because if I deviate it, the whole shebang will mess up. And that would kind of feel like, and if that really were to happen, it would basically feel like, I think, you know, we'll lose agency, you know, that the universe will have to happen in that one particular configuration. And in such a way that all the air molecules will go to one area backward in time. And I think that, I guess that would kind of feel like going backward in time, right? It's just like, you don't have a choice. You're going backward. Like what happened kind of already happened in a way. So it's kind of...
Are you saying that if time goes backwards, then destiny exists, but if it doesn't go backwards, then it doesn't exist? It sounds like that's what you're saying.
Yeah, in some sense. Well, but to some extent, if it goes backward, then it already happened because like you will know, right? You kind of will have a feeling that, hey, you know what? From all these molecular patterns, if you were smart enough, you determined that, hey, that molecule is going to go to the room. And it's almost going to be like you remembered it, you know, in some ways.
No, but we're not smart enough. No, I mean, it wouldn't be like that. Like, you know, you could say the same thing about, you know, our universe. Like, oh, if you're smart enough, you could just, you know, extrapolate all the trajectories. And then, but, you know, the point is we wouldn't be able to do that.
So yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah, I'm not suggesting that we can do it, but I'm saying that for a universe where time flows backward, we have to be able to do it because that's the only way time can flow backward. And indeed, I think going back, Stephen Hawking's original paper, in the paper itself, he actually corrected it himself. He actually mentioned that he was wrong, actually. He mentioned that his colleague pointed out some flaws in his argument and that even if the universe were to contract back again, and it turns out that entropy doesn't necessarily have to decrease. I think that's the more modern understanding now, that increase of entropy actually doesn't need to be exactly the same as having a small universe. So
I think the modern understanding is that like it's not true that whatever Stephen Hawking says is true. He actually is known for betting on things that are unlikely to be true and championing things that are unlikely to be true. So it's weird when we see like these news articles that are like, oh, like Stephen Hawking, you know, said this, and then people assume that like everyone just assumes that's true, but it's actually the opposite. If Stephen Hawking says something is true, you have to, you know, be very, very skeptical. Is he just fooling around? Yeah. Or
yeah, but I would say it's fair. I mean, sure, he was wrong. I mean, we probably shouldn't give him too much criticism either, because we know like really prominent physicists have been wrong. Usually many of them are very open about it. They're like, oh, I was wrong. Great. You know, I realized that I was wrong. So this is just a little bit of a difference between how physicists view some of these ideas versus, you know, the general public view these physics ideas. So
it's possible that Stephen Hawking is wrong more often than most other physicists, just because he's known for, you know, championing ideas that are
a little bit
wacky and unlikely to be true.
Possibly a little bit. I mean, that's one of the reasons why he is more popularly known. You know, he chases more outlandish idea. I it's a matter of style, I suppose.
Yeah. So coming back to this, I guess for going backwards in time, you mentioned that he said that he was wrong about like being able to go backwards can you explain the part about entropy, like entropy not going down as the universe shrinks? It sounds very counterintuitive.
Yeah, exactly. So he thought originally that if we kind of have like an anti Big Bang, basically like a backward Big Bang, which is plausible if a universe shrinks, then everything will go backward. But he was wrong, basically, because so entropy is counting the possibilities. Possibilities could, you know, doesn't just come from the expansion of the universe. I think this is a more modern understanding now. The universe expand or contract, that's not the only thing that dictates what we call entropy. Things like black hole production, you know, star getting extinguished, and all these more intricate physics dynamics also contribute to entropy. And also there's a modern understanding that entropy doesn't necessarily always have to go up, actually. And particularly when you take quantum physics into account, this notion of entropy is a little less defined now, because entropy, as we argue, it has to do with possibilities, you know, and in order for you to count possibilities actually have to be possibilities, right? Like, for example, if you roll a die, you're not going to count the possibility of 7. You're not going to get 7, right? Mm. So you know, when you count the possibility in the beginning of the universe, how should you really count it? Like when the universe was small, should we count the possibility that it could be a particular size? Like, you know, not all possibilities are created equal. So one has to be a little careful counting these entropies. And that makes the discussion a little tricky. So anyway, just having a small universe and also low entropy, it's not necessarily enough to explain the era of time that we observe. And that's the more modern understanding. There needs to be more.
I see. So what you're saying is that the entropic direction of time is not enough to explain like time going backwards or forwards.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in our universe, it works, but in some other imaginary universe, like toy universes, it might not work like that. You could have universes where entropy goes down, goes up, and time kind of goes differently, at least not the way we see it. So physicists have cooked up these toy universes.
Yeah. Going to pop culture, there are a lot of movies that talk about like going back in time and like, you know, like Back to the Future, Tenet, a bunch of other movies. We don't necessarily have to, you know, reveal what the plot lines are to spoil it, but can you comment on that? Like, is that truly going backwards in time? Like, is that, can we actually do something like that? Like, I, you know, get into a time machine and just go like back to the ancient Greeks or like whatever.
Yeah, I think we should kind of like distinguish, like, so in the beginning, you posed a question about going backwards in time. But I think what Tim is really talking about is like, can you reverse the direction of time? And that's different, right? So if you wanted to go backwards in time, you know, you can possibly make a wormhole that connects to some earlier point in time, and like Back to the Future, you could end up there. And then, you know, given your general opinion on things like the grandfather paradox and how those things are resolved, you could cook up something that would, you know, check the box of going backwards in time. But really what we're talking about here thus far has been reversing time, right?
Yeah, I think that's a slightly different concept, right? Like movies only portray you go to a point earlier in time, but yet you still go forward in time. It's almost like you hop on a train, but then visit some other point in time, right? But it's not really like all of a sudden you know, things start going backward. So I think these are two distinct concepts.
Two movies have tackled it, Tenet and Benjamin Button. Those are the two movies that have tackled what we're talking about today.
Makes sense. I guess then, like, how do we know that, like, time right now is not going backwards and we happen to call it the future?
Isn't that what defines what we call the psychological era? Like, yeah, whatever experience the cycle that defines psychological era.
Yeah, I think that distinction is just an artifact, right? Like, we could call forward in time backward. That's totally fine. I mean, in terms of physics, you know, physics treats both directions the same, and it's it's just up to us to decide which way forward, which way backward. Of course, contingent on the what we call the boundary condition. Actually, we do have to cover the question. Maybe that gets lost. Like, there is a reason why we even care about this question at all. It's because there's a theorem that says the laws of physics should apply the same forward in time and backward in time with an asterisk. And this is called the CPT theorem. And it's a very celebrated theorem that can be proved actually using very basic assumptions of the laws of physics. So that's, I think, where some of the conundrum comes from. Like, some of these hypotheticals come from, like, our theories should in principle support going forward or backward in time. But the question is, why is there experimental discrepancy almost that we don't see it?
Wait, sorry, I'm embarrassed to ask this. How do you prove CPT again? Is it related to spin statistics or?
Yeah, it is related to spin statistics. I mean, personally, I don't know the details either. A few assumptions is that, you know, this, if the universe has a certain amount of symmetry, which we believe to be true, that particles had these behaviors related to their spin, which we're not gonna go into. These are very technical arguments about symmetry, and that the universe is local, and by that it means that the interaction has to happen at the same location in space and time.
Wait, I don't think we should get into this detail right now. I just want to if someone talks about a CPT violating theory, that's automatically nonsense, right?
Yeah, basically, it's a mathematical statement. Yeah, if someone comes in and tell me, be like, hey. This theory cannot go backward in time, I'll be like, you screwed up. Sorry, try again.
Well, that's really the crux of it then. This weird fact about the universe that it happens to be manifestly time reversal invariant.
Yeah, actually, you hit upon something interesting. So laws of physics or physical theories say that things can go backwards in time and forward in time. Yet us macroscopically perceive a direction of time. And so I guess, like, how would you construct an experiment to be able to tell if you're going backwards in time relative to the direction that we're moving forwards in?
Yeah, I mean that's a very good question. And in some sense, you actually cannot construct an experiment. Let me quantify that a little bit. Like, if everything is going, let's say, backward in time, then still all the arrows of time will still align, and we will just call forward backward and backward forward, so nothing would change, and you know, you cannot experimentally distinguish this. So the arrow of time itself is not a problem, right? The question is, why is this direction so consistent? Why don't we see, you know, my hand going forward in time and my left hand goes forward in time and my right hand goes backward in time? That's really the discrepancy there. Like, you know, if the laws of physics apply equally forward and backward, how come we don't see separate isolated systems kind of have slightly different directions of time, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the only thing that's experimentally testable. Or actually, there's a third possibility, right? It's somewhat related, right? We're basically saying that in order to test this, we need to have systems where one goes forward in time, one goes backward in time. You know, that could happen on a small scale, or that could happen in the grand scale. You know, if we live in the multiverse, if physics applies equally forward and backward, then meaning that quantum mechanically, if there's a possibility of forward in time, there should be a, you know, a part of some kind of a universe possibility that goes backward in time, because it has to be kind of symmetrical. So, you know, whether that's observable or not, you know, it's probably debatable, right? And then you can argue, is this physics? Is it not physics? Can it be falsified? Can it not be falsified? So.
I see. So one other thing I wanted to ask about either you or Mikey is about antiparticles. So I remember hearing from Richard Feynman, or rather quotes from him, or his study of his modeling of antiparticles as regular particles traveling backwards in time, or particles traveling backward in time. So my question is, like, if we were in a universe made of antiparticles, would we be going backwards in time, but actually calling it forwards?
That's the CPT thing. Yeah. So you could describe our universe as a universe of particles moving forwards in times, or as a collection of antiparticles moving backwards in time. But that's not backwards or forwards in terms of any like strict sense. Like literally, it's a relative forwards or backwards with respect to the calculation you're doing, right? It's not indicative of any.
Yeah. It's
not related to one of these four, is it?
Mathematically, you're literally, you know, whenever you see the time t, you just put a negative sign in front of it. It tells you that every calculation will be similar. Of course, you interpret it differently. Yeah, like Mikey was saying, like when we see an antiparticle, we can think of it as an antiparticle or an ordinary particle moving backward in time. Mm-hmm. You know, both perspectives are valid to the extent that's how you read the equation. So you could argue that, look, there are some particles just moving backward in time already.
So we are almost at time. So I wanted to give you guys a chance to answer the question we came in with: can time flow backwards? And leave any thoughts you have with the audience.
Yeah, I would say that in light of the CPT theorem, I would say yes, because this question is almost a matter of convention a little bit. Because you could just add a negative sign in front of time in every single equation. And because of the CPT theorem, you can be like, well, let me just pretend all the particles are antiparticles. And the reason we need that is because, you know, complex number, you add a sign in front of time, and then you can compensate that by adding a negative sign in imaginary, you know, numbers, but ignoring all that. But then it tells you that you know, the overwhelming flow of time, you can reverse it. It doesn't do anything. It's just purely conventional. So it's not really an interesting discussion. The real meat of the discussion is, can we have time that flows forward and backward at the same time, right? Like two systems that flow both forward or backward. Forward and backward. And experimentally, we haven't really seen this. Like, we have seen it in a very contrived, like, engineer system, but naturally we don't see this. So from that regard, we can rule that out. Like, our theory does not support, you know, like my left hand moving forward in time, my right hand moving backward in time, whatever that means. There needs to be some force, you know, if you can call it that, that kind of coherently create this overwhelming sense of forward in time. And Stephen Hawking kind of tells you why. It's because of the boundary condition, yada yada yada. So that's not totally unexplained. But the key question I think now is that, are there systems that are really far apart where one moves forward and one moves backward, like multiple universes? And that is unsolved. We actually don't know. You know, maybe our universe supports that, or maybe our universe does not support that. Like, I think different physicists has taken different viewpoints and come up with different theoretical models that explore some of those. But personally, you know, I can't tell you which one is the preference for me. But you know, question mark. Maybe not. So,
Mikey, what do you think?
Yeah, I guess the way I'd summarize it is, you know, so when we talk about time, like as in space, you can talk about relative time. So relative time is always reversible, you know, just depends on whether or not you mean, you know, you're starting from plus 10 or minus 10. You can just flip a minus sign. And the question about the arrow of time, you know, these thought experiments deal with some kind of like overall notion of time, like you can track time by how big the universe is getting if you assume it's getting bigger. And I don't know, I think this conversation doesn't leave me that satisfied, because I feel like the real mystery here is the psychological arrow of time. Like, why is the psychological arrow of time aligned with the one in which entropy is increasing? And I don't know, maybe that's not a physics question. I'm not sure.
well, Mikey, we would refer you to our previous episode.
All the answers are there.
Well, I think we explained some of it from the perspective of electromagnetism, but of course, you know, if you want to dig into consciousness, like why does this conscious feeling of time arises, I think that requires something else, right? It's like then we're talking about like, you know, how the emergence of consciousness, which I don't think we can quite get into as physicists. So.
I think the explanation of boundary conditions is not quite satisfying to me. I just think there's more to talk about with this.
See. Then Mikey, future episode in the works now.
We definitely should circle back with those.
Yeah, you heard it, folks. All right then. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us, and we'll see you all next week.
See you all next week.
Yeah.
Bye.